Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 34. And Dave, who would have believed Episode 100 in total of the Terrible Podcast?
Yes, number 100. What a great day. And, I don't care what number it is. I'm just glad to have you back. Nick Ricchetta did a great job filling in for you, but we were worried about you out in Vegas there. We were worried if you maybe got married and have a new face tattoo or what have you, but it seems like you traveled half the world in that time anyway, in addition to that.
A good trip all around. No face tattoo, and as far as I know, I didn't get married.
Or if you did, hopefully it was a woman.
Yeah, right. Dave, a little bit of sad news, I guess, in the world of the Steelers today. Since we have spoken last over the weekend, Aaron Smith got put on the IR, and I hate to make the finality of it, but look, Aaron Smith's football with the Pittsburgh Steelers is now officially over. In the past two seasons before this one, he only played, I think, a total of 9 or 10 games before being put on the IR in 2009. And then, of course, they kept a spot on the roster for him all of 2010, all the way up to the Super Bowl. He never made it back on the field. Came in here and played a couple games and then injured his foot against the Texans. Against the Texans, and didn't make it back. Had a neck problem that he thought would taper down and recover while he was out with the injured foot, but it didn't. He went and saw the doctors, and he's going to have surgery. This is a guy who has had a great career as a Steeler. Unfortunately, the past 3 years haven't gone quite the way he would have hoped or Steeler fans would have hoped.
Yeah, it really is to see, a career end like this. But, you know, most of them do when you hang around and all like that. But, you know, without a doubt, Aaron will go down as one of the top 3-4, five technique type defensive ends in the league, so it's discouraging to see. It kind of came out of nowhere with this neck injury. We knew about the foot and all like that, but this came out of the blue. And although he hasn't announced his retirement, and he really didn't want to talk to reporters yesterday after the game, which is to be expected, I expect over the next few months or whatnot, he'll make the decision up on that. I think he's scheduled to count, after they redid his contract, roughly $3 million against the salary cap next year, should he play. But with the crunch that they'll have already with the cap, if for some reason he does try to play next year, it won't be at that number. So I fully expect him to just walk away from the game. It's time. He has nothing else to prove going forward here. And, it's just sad to see it end this way.
Yep, no question, sad to see it go. I think there's no doubt he won't be back next year. Look, the Steelers wouldn't afford to take that cap hit and that physical risk and a guy who's aging like that. Look, we saw the Steeler defense get a lot younger yesterday with both Chris Hoak and Casey Hampton inactive. You saw Steve McClendon step in and really do a nice job. You had Ziggy. You have Cameron Hayward. They were drafted for this eventuality. It's come a little sooner than we would have expected. But good job by both those guys. A really nice career for Aaron Smith out of Northern Colorado. I think 11 years in the league, 11 or 12 years in the league. And, I guess the only unfortunate thing when you look back at his career, he's going to have some great stuff, eventually a Pro Bowl and some Super Bowls. I guess just the one thing that is too bad for him, when the time he was getting his recognition, really kind of getting known around the league, was 2007, 2008. And really coming, I hate to say coming into his own, but a little bit like Brett Kiesel here in the past 2 years, a little bit of an older guy getting his props on that Steeler defense where the linebackers get most of the props. And then, of course, 2009, 10, and 11 here, he really hardly gets to play, hardly on the field at all. And, tough way to go out. But as you said, most guys don't get to go this deep into their career. And eventually, oftentimes, it is an injury that ends it for you. Kudos to him, and, you know, been great fun to watch him as a Steeler fan.
Yeah, and how fitting, I think, yesterday, too, Woodley passed him on the sack list as well, you know. So already starting to slowly get erased. I mean, not he won't from our memories. That's for sure. For the true Steeler purist fans and all like that, we'll always remember what he brought, the type of guy he was on and off the field as well. And the team, you know, is kind of rallying around him, dedicating the rest of the season to him as expected. But, yeah, moving on, you know, to you know, we got some youth movement going on yesterday, as you stated, with McClendon at the nose. I thought he played a fairly good game. I mean, he still had his issues and all. Ziggy had another good game. Cameron Hayward really didn't splash yesterday. Brett Kiesel, though, you know, he, of course, it's so hard for him to follow up that game he had against the Jaguars. But, you know, he made his presence felt with some pressures and all like that and did okay against the run. But the movement's on. Corbin Bryant's now on the 53-man roster. I would expect he probably stays there now for the rest of the year. He saw one or two snaps, I think, yesterday, and he'll slowly probably get eased into some more time. And, you know, it is what it is with him, and it's sad to see it end that way, as I said, but it's time. You know, it happens to all players. There's a time to hang them up, and now the Steelers move forward.
So let's get into what happened yesterday, Dave. Let's just open it up with the injury report coming out of the game. I know Ben got banged around a lot in the second half, but he's not on the injury report, is he?
Right. Well, he's not yet. That Tomlin has let us know, but you know, that could change on Tuesday. Tomlin pretty much said the only injury of note yesterday was, of course, the sprained ankle or ankle injury suffered by Hines Ward yesterday about halfway through the game. He did not return, but Tomlin went on to say, hey, we know about his healing powers, and he's going to save a spot on the bus for him next week against New England. So I don't know. You know, we'll have to see how the week goes. Ward never really practices on Wednesday anyways, so that would kind of, it's not like he needs a ton of reps during the week regardless. So you could probably see him get some time off this week and then probably, you know, be active and maybe lose some more snaps on the field Sunday if he does suit up and play. But Ben, you know, Ben's Ben. He takes the lick and keeps on ticking. Marquise Pouncey seemed to dinged his elbow up again yesterday. He suffered that injury late in practice last week and all, so we'll have to watch that going forward. But there's no way he misses. Mike Wallace, he showed no ill effects of that hamstring twinge that he had going on. But other than that, you know, I guess we'll start to hopefully get some bodies back, maybe some Chris Hoke this next week as he recovers from that stinger. Lord knows about Jason Worlds at this point. I really was hoping the kid was going to suit up this week, but, you know, he kind of dinged that quad up again late in practice last week. Ligurski, of course, is going to be out probably a few more weeks on top of it. But, you know, it's a time of the year we need to start getting healthy.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what's interesting, Dave, and it is a little bit of a segue from that Aaron Smith conversation, is I would say it's probably likely that, you know, Aaron Smith, Casey Hampton, and Doug Ligurski aren't on the squad next year. So if I were a betting man and somebody said you got to flip a coin one way or the other, I think all three of those guys are guys up in age. Obviously, maybe Ligurski's position versatility gives him a chance to be back. Excuse me, I'm saying Ligurski. I meant Chris Hoke. You could see all three of those defensive linemen, three of the six guys who were really three of the six or seven guys with the Steelers this year. You'll really see the changing of the guard. And if McClendon continues to play well, we'll see what we have from Corbin Bryant. But the Steelers are going to get a look at these guys. And if they perform well, they're obviously going to be much cheaper. We're talking about opening up big, big kind of swaths of salary cap space going forward. So we've seen the first move with Aaron Smith here. And, you know, obviously we'd like to have Casey back as we make a run here down the stretch. But enjoy these games with Casey Hampton and Chris Hoke, because there's a decent chance they're in their last, 10 to 15 games as a Steeler as well.
Yeah, I think Hoke, you know, depending on what they have depth-wise, and, you know, he should qualify for another qualifying contract to knock a little bit off what he counts salary cap-wise and all. So I wouldn't rule him out, however highly unlikely it may be. You know, we thought maybe this year he wouldn't be back, and lo and behold, he was. So he's a good depth guy, not a guy that you count on starting 16 games, of course. The thing with McClendon, you know, a little bit smallish guy, though. You know, he's got the speed still. You know, he had his issues yesterday. Let's not lose fact of that, albeit bit. He played a nice game and was in on several tackles and held a point for the most part. You know, it all depends. Casey Hampton's got that big number out there too, so he's missed several games this year. I would think they're going to draft one this year. They also had signed one to the practice squad just recently, so I don't think he has much long-term implications here either. But, yeah, I mean, we're going to see a change in other guard. I think Brett Kiesel really, his play coming on this year, despite being out a few games, is really, I think he'll be back, with what he brings right now, despite his number and all like that. But, yeah, Hampton and Hoke, no guarantees that they'll be back. Maybe a little bit of youth movement there. Maybe McClendon works on some strength and some technique and holds down the fort for a little while until a new kid comes along.
Yeah, it was interesting with McClendon to watch him play. He had five tackles, and, there are not many games when Casey has five tackles, but he plays a different type of game, just as you said. He's undersized, he's undersized compared to Casey. Casey's going to take up those two guys, just a massive body in there in the middle of that game, and McClendon's obviously relying a little bit more on quickness, doing some different things. As you said, did some things well, but, and for his first start as an undrafted rookie in his second year, solid work, but a different type of game. And just what you pointed out, Steelers need, they're looked at get a big, big guy in there, more of a Casey type prototype, and probably look forward to that in the draft. But let's go forward here. With the game, maybe just for anybody who maybe didn't catch all the action and get the inactives, why don't you just run through who the Steelers had inactive? It was mostly guys who were obviously on the injured list.
Yeah, there were no really big surprises. I thought, we all knew the chance of Worlds being down, and he, of course, was. James Harrison was down with his injury. I still think it's too early for him to come back against New England. I think more likely maybe Baltimore the following week would be more realistic, although still pushing it. Dennis Dixon down. Jonathan Dwyer was down with Mawaldi Moore back. Doug Legursky out with that dislocated toe. Chris Hoke, we talked about with that stinger. Casey Hampton with the shoulder, which we still don't know much about. And then, of course, Worlds.
Yep, and Worlds with the hamstring. And we'll see where things go from there. Dave, just in turn, I don't know how much of a chance you've had to look at personnel groupings, but before we get into kind of how the game went, I didn't get, in my television viewing, I didn't get to see much in terms of how the secondary was lined up. But it was pretty much the same thing with Gay at the corner, with and then sliding inside with Keenan Lewis when the Steelers went nickel, and then Mundy on the dime bringing Farrier off. Is that more or less how you saw it? No Curtis Brown and no Bryant McFadden?
Well, no Bryant Matt McFadden, but what we did see yesterday is we saw some true dime instead of that big nickel dime that they've been playing. The big nickel, of course, is when Mundy comes on as an extra safety and Troy slides down. What we saw yesterday for probably a good, I don't have it completely charted yet, but it probably 8 to 10 plays, Cortez Allen was in there as a sixth defensive back and a more true dime look on options when the Cardinals went spread it, kind of out there, which kind of maybe lets you know kind of where their head might be going into this New England game this week. Maybe some different looks like that going big nickel and then into a true dime, depending on the personnel it's put out there. We did not see Curtis Brown on the field, though, however, which lets you know that they either he's not performing well in practice and grasping everything, or Cortez Allen really has turned the corner real quick after that kind of slow, hampered by injury preseason and all start to the year there. So no really true nickel either. So it was either when they went to the sub packages, it was big nickel or true dime.
Yeah, and that's really what I saw, which is why I asked the question, because I hadn't had a chance to look through the tape again. The other thing I'll tell you, and I'll just throw this out there, is that I got a word from, I think I mentioned it is you, this to you off air a few weeks ago, but I got a word that from what the personnel people are seeing over at Steeler practices, they are in love with Curtis Brown and Cortez Allen, and think they have done just a fabulous job in their kind of wherever we are, 2-3 months now in the organization, picking things up. And the fact that, Cortez Allen coming out of the Citadel is seeing the field in not scrub time just tells you that's pretty impressive stuff. Again, as we talk about the changing of the guard in the Steeler defense, expect those two guys to be big parts of things sooner rather than later, and certainly by next year, we continue to see them taking steps forward. Always nice to see young kids making an impact. And certainly, Dave, getting into the game itself, you know, it's not a coming out party for Antonio Brown, or the whole season has been. Ever since the beginning of preseason, this kid has been impressive. And we see Mike Wallace doing the things he's doing. The Steeler wide receiver core, I wouldn't trade it for anybody in the game right now. There are other teams with top-notch guys, but they've got four guys, and Cotchery is a fifth guy who you can stack up with anybody in the league.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, kind of the only thing that we hadn't seen was a good percentage of connections with Antonio Brown and Emmanuel Sanders through the first six games. We saw a lot better connection with it yesterday, that's for sure. And, you know, that's what they need. Mike Wallace is going to get his. He's going to get his home run balls, you know, on top of it. I had a post up about the deep balls and earlier this past week about how Roethlisberger kind of his, you know, completion percentage of deeper balls has been suffering, especially kind of in the 20 to 40 yard range, and more specifically to Brown and Sanders. They made good strides this week in that area. Antonio Brown just pretty much took over the game, although he did not score yesterday. The kid also had, you know, when you look at all of his yardage with punt and kick returns combined, he had 200 yards worth of output yesterday, and not to mention, you know, a spectacular catch on the sideline. Seemed to be doing all the little things. I didn't see any missed reads or anything like that. Sanders chipped in with a couple of nice catches of his five balls as well, one in the back of the end zone on one of the touchdowns, and he continues to shine as far as his blocking prowess goes. And, you know, when you get like that and that deadly, it's going to open up a lot of, you know, the area of the field for Heath Miller. And we're starting to see Heath Miller take over games like he's capable of, and him being used more in spot situations. And you just cannot cover them all. And you throw Ward in there. Hopefully he's still back healthy. Brutal, you know, on third down still, although was not the best blocker yesterday. He got trucked one time by Adrian Wilson on a running play there, kind of uncharacteristic. But, you know, Ward, you know, let's not throw him out with the bathwater just yet.
Yeah, it's such a talented group, and I think we've been expecting to see this kind of explosive offense. Of course, in the Jacksonville game in the second half, very disappointing. Let's get into the game itself. The Steelers go down the field on the first drive and score. It's four of the last five games they've scored on their first possession. A nice play design where clearly a mix-up in the Arizona defense. It was the two outside linebackers. Clark Hagans was really the only one who had an impact, but he missed his coverage or thought he had safety help behind him in a zone, and Heath Miller wide open for the touchdown. You got to give Bruce Arians credit for the way the Steelers are coming out into games these days. I mean, they're well prepared. I think the fact that that they're scoring on their first drives on four out of the last five games just is very indicative. That's coaching and that's preparation early on. We can talk about whether some of these second half falterings are also a lack of coaching and a lack of ability to re-scheme as the game goes on. But a really nice start offensively. And it's clear that, Antonio Brown is becoming more and more of a go-to guy for Ben.
Yeah, most definitely is. And on that touchdown to Heath Miller, you're not going to see any much more easier than that. Hines Ward kind of rubbed off Hagans, you know, working inside there. And Hagans just looked dumbfounded of where he was to be there. You know, he obviously, I think, thought he had safety help. That was not there, and that was just an easy pitch and catch. And we talked about Brown. I mean, this guy continues to make plays. He's deadly as far as that goes, but it was a great start to the game. It's what you want to see, the offense come down, drive, and you know, not settle for the field goal, put it in the end zone for six.
And then what we've seen, Dave, from the Steeler defense, you know, we could talk about whether, you know, their impressiveness is due to a lack of capability on the other side. I think Ed Bouchette wrote some things about, you know, they've faced two decent quarterbacks so far this year in Flacco and Schaub, and they're the only two games the Steelers have lost. I'm not as down on Kevin Cobb as some people. Look, the guy doesn't have a lot of NFL experience. That's a Steeler defense that was getting penetration, and they got penetration early. And ever since James Harrison has gone down, Lamar Woodley has really stepped it up.
Yes, he has. I mean, the guy has been, you know, a lot of everybody, you know, including me a little bit, taking some shots at him, saying he was off to a slow start. He really
he was off to a slow start.
Huh?
He was off to a slow
Yeah,
start.
He was, most definitely. And then, you know, it really showed on that running play against the Texans, out of position, it seemed, on the cutback by Arian Foster for the big run as well. After that, though, he's turned it around. You know, maybe he just seems to be a slow starter, I guess. But, I mean, he really has turned around. He was pretty much unblockable. One of his sacks, he was even held on by the tight end yesterday, was pretty much all over the field on that, on his side. The safety, you know, he calls the safety. I don't know how that had to be a missed assignment there, how you let him just come free like that, how Kevin Cobb thinks he's just going to avoid the pass rush there. So he, you know, technically that's three sacks on a day, although he'll only get credit for two on that. But, you know, that's another splash play that we're talking about. And let's not forget the splash play to open up the game, too, you know, outside of Woodley's play. Ferrier gets a hand up, tips a ball that's intercepted by Ryan Clark that sets that offense up for that drive to go down and score there. So,
and you know, we've talked about, you know, how this turnover ratio is way, way against this team. Still, you know, I don't know if it's just luck or the way, you know, small sample size of seven games, not only having only three turnovers is a little disconcerting. Teams don't seem to be putting the ball on the ground against us very often, or when they do, they seem to get it back. But yeah, it was nice to get one early. And this team, there's no question, this team is comfortable playing with a lead. They do it well, and I just think it allows them to do a lot of things that they would like to do. And yeah, a good catch by Ryan Clark. And then Troy should have had one on the second possession, right? Hit him right in the chest.
Yeah, he dropped an easy one there. And that, boy, how many has that been this year for Troy dropping right in his hands? You know, it's just one of those things. You know, so, sometimes the ball finds you easier than others. The ball's finding him. He's just not making a play on it this year. And, heck, that's probably another four or five turnovers we could have created right there. And you're right, we're not forcing the fumbles this year either. So, you know, Mike Tomlin doesn't seem to be too worried about it, not going to be taking any risk or, you know, anything to go out of the way to try to create more turnovers that might get you killed on the back end. I think they're just going to be happen. You know, I think they're just going to happen in certain situations. Tip balls certainly do help. We've seen that from Kiesel and Ferrier the last few games as far as that goes. Get your arms up, get the ball up in the air, and let the tip drill kind of take over there. I think the biggest thing, though, on the flip side of that is our offense is not turning the ball over. And that's key. We saw Roethlisberger use his running backs a lot better yesterday under duress and not forcing the ball into an area deep downfield instead of just, you know, just dumping off to Redmond a few times in Mendenhall. I was glad to see that. And, you know, if you're not turning the ball over and giving teams a short field, it makes a huge difference in a game.
Yeah, particularly with this defense. And it was interesting to watch. Clearly, Ike Taylor, you know, knows what kind of receiver Larry Fitzgerald was. And in that first half, we saw a bunch of flags, one on Fitzgerald for his own pass interference. And I don't know how many, it might have been even up to four on Ike. You know, mostly defensive holding type penalties, playing a very physical game with him. Look, you know, you never want to see the defensive holding stuff. It's the automatic first down. But as frustrating it is to have penalties called on your team, I mean, I'm reasonably solid with the approach.
Yeah, and he played them physical yesterday, as we would expect. He, you know, had a pass interference call. I think he had another one in there that really belonged to Troy on one of those that they called.
I think they called that a defensive holding call on early Doucette that Troy ran him over.
Yeah, and Taylor was the one that was, I think, in the game book as far as that goes and was announced as that. You know, legal contact. Hey, I'm fine with the way he played Larry Fitz yesterday. I mean, that's the way you got to play the guy. Let's face it, the guy only had, what, four catches, and two of them came, I think, didn't they come on the last drive of the game? So,
yeah.
Hey, you know, and one of the catches early on by Fitzgerald was a great catch. And I tell you, you can't cover a guy any better than that. So
no, that was a great catch in that first quarter.
You know, and Ike started to get frustrated there, and I thought it was good that Mike Tomlin pulled him aside. I think I saw even Troy wrap his head around, arm around his head one time and said, hey, just keep playing like you're playing there. And, you know, and that's what he did. As long as he does not get frustrated and get out of his game, he'll be fine. And, boy, the Pro Bowl season continues, and I think I read that Mike Tomlin didn't let him rest on his laurels too long yesterday coming into the locker room, basically said, hey, you know, Wes Welker next week, you know, and that's going to be a huge test next week. After that, though, it should get a little bit easier. And, boy, this Pro Bowl run, I don't see how you cannot say this guy, along with Darrelle Revis from the AFC side, is not deserving.
Well, there are a couple other guys in there like Flowers and a few others, but certainly a good start for Ike. And let's not discount the kid Torrey Smith from Baltimore all of a sudden, who looks like he might be, you know, their own version of what they hope becomes Mike Wallace, because he's become a real threat for them. So Ike may get his chances with him the week after Wes Welker. But, Dave, one of the disconcerting things about this offense occasionally is we occasionally see the dumb things. And the two things that stood out to me on the penalty front were we saw Kemo take another stupid personal foul, scraping a guy off the pile late in a play. I think it was a pass play over the middle to Hines, and we saw David Johnson with two illegal motion penalties. Is this stuff that you know, is just going to work itself out and nothing to be concerned about? Or, you know, since we've seen this kind of some history of this with Kemo, is this something Tomlin needs to pull him aside? Because he's going to get fined for that one as well.
Oh yeah, he's going to get fined for that one with the pill and the guy off the top of the pile for sure. Maybe that'll be the best thing for him right there, having to pay the money now. So maybe this fine situation will kind of work in our favor. Hey, this guy is just nasty, you know. He's just a nasty player. I also had the face mask call yesterday in the first half, and he got away with a two-point takedown as well, too, in there that was not called. He did not have the best game yesterday returning back from that knee injury. I can't wait to do my offensive line breakdown on him, but he really looked off yesterday. It looks like that knee's still bothering him, and it will the rest of the year. I just hope we don't get in a pinch there in between waiting for Ligurski to come back and Kemo having to miss another game with that knee, missing out on a right guard, because Trey Essex, you know, he's good here and there in spot duty, a snap here and there, but I think you really lose a lot with him at left guard, and I think Ligurski, once Ligurski gets healthy, I think it's time to make a change in, if you will, pardon the pun, changing of the guard there. I really did not like what I saw from Kemo Otto. Those penalties could have been really brutal. Well, actually, it was. I mean, it ended a drive there for one thing. So, you know, coaching is all you can do. It's up to the players sooner or later. But as long as David Johnson goes, hey, you know, he's going to have his games like that. He can bust some brutal blocks, though. Let me tell you, that guy can really clean out a hole, you know, and I'm willing to forgive a here and there false start.
Yep. Not much to say about the Mike Wallace 95-yard touchdown other than the fact that it takes Mark Malone out of the Steeler record books catching a 90-yarder. When he was split out to wide receiver way back in the day in the 80s.
You know, a lot of people don't remember how that actually went down. Lynn Swann was hurt at the time, and Mark Malone had bursitis at the time. I think that was his rookie year in 81. 80 or 81, if memory recalls. And, you know, Chuck Knoll said, hey, you can't throw. You want to run some pass routes and all. And he said, okay. And you know, he ended up playing a little bit, I think, earlier in the year, taking, you know, some reps out there. Well, Lynn Swann was down, and Malone took a kind of a short hitch from Bradshaw and went 90 yards down the sideline there. And it's hard to believe that pass play, of course, 90 is a pretty long way, you know, there have been others that tied it, but took Mike Wallace to bust it.
Yep, and that'll probably be in the books a long time unless Mike takes it out, because a little move, what I thought was interesting on the play is it looked like to me he could have run the streak toward the boundary, and he decided to go inside of the DB who had just taken a step up on the initial play action fake. And I thought he was going to cut outside him. He decided to cut inside him. I probably made the throw a tad easier for Ben. Ben laid it out there. And then it's a foot race. And, you know, I do give some credit to the safety. Mike didn't run away from the safety. That safety did a good job coming from an angle, at least making it, a play where Mike had to take a little hop step at the 10-yard line. The corner really had no chance at that point. But fun to see. It's stupid how many games now he's had with a reception, over 40 yards. I think he and Ben have now hooked up on 13 pass and catch over 40 yards since he's entered the league, the most in the NFL in that time. And I think, actually, it's not only the most in the NFL, I think it's the most of any active combination, because I think Peyton Manning and Reggie Wayne were at 12, and those guys seem to put up one of those every week. They did it last week, I think. They did it, obviously, again yesterday. Fun stuff to watch. His numbers are crazy good. You want to talk about a guy who's going to be in the Pro Bowl, there's no doubt, and he is now he's now kind of a guy who's going to be in the conversation for all pro.
Yeah, one thing about that play, the play design initially was to go to the tight end up underneath there. And as you said, he got a free release and was allowed to get up inside. Richard Marshall, I don't know what he was peeking into the backfield for with safety middle third of the other side. I'm pretty sure in Rashad Johnson. And Rashad Johnson, you mentioned it, this little that kid out of Alabama, not slow by any means. He did a good job at a tough angle there, as you mentioned there, but it was all over as soon as that ball hit the hands. And Mike, once he had inside and was even with him, he raised his hand up and Ben caught it out of the corner of his eye. Just goes to show you how one play design one way, has so many options involved. The offensive coordinator takes such a beating sometimes when a play does not work, but it takes the quarterback and everybody doing their part to open up other aspects, second and third, decisions to be made in there to make things like that happen. And boy, I just don't see how you cannot, how you can let Mike run that free like that.
Yep. And credit to the Cardinals. They came right back and scored a long drive with a lot of penalties involved, a couple third down, first downs due to penalty. They came back and scored. And then what we've seen from the Steelers, it always makes you wonder why they don't run a little more no huddle, because they do it effectively. They only had a minute 20 left, and they were still able to get off eight plays. It ends up, not perfectly at the end, but Ben has a spike, and then Mueldy doesn't get the first down on a third and one, so they got to kick the 41-yard field goal. But that kind of ends the half at 17-7, but I think this is probably a good time as any to talk about special teams, Dave. I know Sushi missed a kick last week, but I'll tell you, across the board, Steelers special teams have been off the charts good so far this year. Antonio Brown has turned into a ridiculously good return man. I mean, outside of the Devin Hester type guys, who maybe he's the only one. I don't know that there's anybody I think is more dangerous with the ball in their hands in space right now than Antonio Brown. He's done a fantastic job. Sepulveda has been very good, as he was all through the preseason. He dropped one early in the game down on the 5-yard line. And, Sushi is knocking his kickoffs into the end zone virtually all the time. Yeah, he's missed some kicks, but they're not layup kicks. They haven't been game-deciding kicks. Yesterday, none of those were easy kicks, but he's in a good field, in a good condition, in a dome, and he knocked them all through. Our kick coverage has been good. Our punt coverage has been good. Just, I think it's been really, really solid, and a little bit overlooked because nothing bad's happened.
Yeah, you remember a couple years back when we hated to either punt or kick off, it seemed like what a difference a few years make. I kind of noted that Chris Carter, Stevenson Sylvester had some nice games. You got some good guys on there. Ryan Mundy, Will Allen, a lot of these guys, that's their job. Curtis Brown, although he hasn't seen the field, he's helped out a lot on special teams as well, has quite a few key tackles. And, me and Nick, when I had Nick on last week, we kind of said, hey, enough with this trick play, trying to, have Sanders out there and faking end around and all like that. I'm much more happier when Antonio just takes it and goes. And, he is turning into a deadly return guy. Teams continue to kick towards him. As I mentioned earlier, he added 200 yards total of yardage yesterday, 100, over 100 or so in returns yesterday. This guy is a weapon. It's not going to be long long before he takes one in the house. And that's why you're not going to hear Tomlin start giving him too much praise. He's going to needle him that until he does take one to the house, he should not be considered a top return man. So I think that's a way to keep him humble. I think that time is coming. And as you mentioned, Sepulveda, I think two were inside the 20 yesterday. Sushi, I've been worried about him. I've got to be honest. But nothing gives a kicker confidence like playing in a dome. You know, so let's just hope when he gets back to Hines these next two games, he's able to square that away. But I've really been happy with a special teams play.
Yep. You know, the Cardinals make it a game in the third quarter. They score there on their opening possession after the Steelers move the ball a little bit and punts. Sepulveda punts down to the 11, a 49-yard punt. And the Cards get a big play. And one of the things we've seen with this Steelers defense over the years is they never give up the big play. And, you know, the last time Arizona was playing us out west, I guess it was actually down in Florida, we saw Larry Fitzgerald take that one about 70 yards right up the gut on a seam route for a touchdown in the Super Bowl. And this game we see Rashard Stevens-Halink run a little crossing pattern and it seems like everybody got lost. And on the television commentary, they talk about Troy falling down. Well, Troy was trying to cut and return field. And look, 5 yards behind Stephen Tallings, he's not catching him on a straight foot race the way it turned out to be. So it wasn't Troy. I don't like to criticize Dick LeBeau, but one of the things the Steelers have trouble with is running backs. And in this case, Stephen Tallings was lined up in the slot, being covered by James Ferrier. And you can't have Ferrier and Foote run with those guys for long periods of time. And he ended up running an out. And once he got turned on that corner, when you got a good block from the tight end, it's a foot race and nobody else was really in the play on that coverage. And, you know, look, other teams are going to make plays. It happens. It's not a disaster. The Steelers ended up winning this game pretty easily. But that kind of play design worries me, and that's when we talk about who's on the field and personnel groups, because that wasn't that was a 2nd and 18, and I'm not sure why Ferrier's on the field for that play.
Well, 2nd and 18, I mean, he's going to be in there and either dime or you know, looks like that. I mean, you're not going to take Ferrier right now off the field, I don't think. Foote is the guy that comes out when you go into that dime. And all second, I think I want to say that they were still in base defense on that play. And it was a little jerk route to the running back, 5 yards, gets to the outside there. There was a nice block by the tight end on top of it. Troy got caught inside. William Gay got blocked off. No one could chase him down. Ryan Clark tried to trail him after that. But, you know, it's just a little play that broke loose on him. I mean, Ferrier wasn't having to run with him for a long distance there after he kind of gave that fake inside and then busted back to the outside on the route. It looked like a pretty harmless play to start with. The Steelers missed several tackles yesterday, but it wasn't on that play. That's for sure. The guy pretty much was untouched after that. So I don't know. You know, it's hard to point a finger when that's the first time that we've seen something like that happen big play-wise in a while. Now, we all hearken back to Ferrier covering Leonard on that key fourth down, I think it was, a couple years back against the Bengals. Hey, he's not fantastic covering guys out of backfield. That's no secret there. It's what he provides you in the running game as far as support and all, is why he's out there and why he's a master and always being in the right area on the field. You know, it's just one of those plays that kind of busts loose for him. I bet if they ran that thing 90 more times, I would be surprised if they broke it that big like that. But it was a big play in the game and gave them life and kind of back in it there.
And much to the Steelers' credit, Ben takes him right down the field. And I just, you know, I've been kind of singing Manny Sanders' praises all year since the end of last year. And we've seen Antonio Brown really step up. And it was nice to see Manny get involved in this drive. Gets targeted 3 times on a 2nd and 10. Ben hits him for 5. And then the big play, when you really saw how fast Manny Sanders is as well, is when he takes that pass short middle and zips it up to the 2-yard line. It's that kind of burst of speed I think sometimes we forget. And with Antonio Brown doing such a great job, we see the speed he has and him being involved in the return game. We forget how fast Manny Sanders can be and the good job he can do. And then he gets rewarded on a fantastic job by Ben of just kind of stopping dead on a dime when a linebacker has a free run at him and then find Sanders in the back of the end zone for his, I think, his first touchdown of the season.
And we haven't talked about the offensive line play. I mean, it was like watching a roller coaster yesterday as far as that goes. The first half run blocking, just there was nothing there. They weren't creating any holes. Now to the Cardinals' credit, they were kind of focusing on making sure they weren't beat inside in between the tackles there. They've had some problems on the right side this year when teams are run against them to the offense's right hand side, and with the Steelers being such a right handed running team, you kind of expected a little more. It wasn't there. Rashard Mendenhall's catching hell this morning, but there was no lanes there. It wasn't until later in the game, fourth quarter to be exact, where the Cardinals looked gassed, and that's when the Steelers were able to run on them. They still rushed for, 90-something yards on the day total, I think. Let's see here. What was the rushing totals? Oh, yeah, 91 yards on 28 carries, albeit Mendenhall 13 for 32. But back to Sanders there, I just want to make sure we hit on the offensive line, how up and down it was, and more specifically, how Ben just is Ben and is able to escape the pressures like that. He was under duress more this game. He found the open guy in the back of the end zone, and credit to Sanders for keep working and get himself open back there.
Yeah, and David, to carry on with that conversation, Ed Bouchette, who you and I both enjoy his writing, and he's been a guest on the show a few times, I think he really missed the mark this morning on some of that. And I'm with you totally on Rashard Mendenhall. I think he made it sound like Rashard wasn't running hard, he looked bad, and that he's not a guy who can be a feature back maybe in this offense. And I just find that I disagree with that is probably the way I should put it. I didn't see any hole that Rashard missed in the game, particularly in the first half. I thought in the second half, actually, he did a decent job, turned the corner on a play where I didn't think he'd get it, did a nice job on a little on the sidelines one time when he got hit hard and stumbled forward for four or five more yards. I didn't see him missing stuff. And as you said, Kemo didn't have a great game. I'm not sure Marcus Gilbert, my first time through the film, I didn't think he particularly had a great game. Stuff up the middle didn't really seem to be there. So I am absolutely – look, there are times in the season when it looked like Rashard was slow to the hole and maybe dancing a little bit rather than pounding it like so many Steeler fans like to see. But I'm not putting it at all on Rashard yesterday.
Yeah, they were shooting the gaps quite good yesterday. I guess Ramon Foster, too, I saw a couple errors there. I think on Pouncey I saw one. Kemo definitely on one. We talked earlier in the show about the safety trucking Hines Ward deep down in the red zone one time for a negative yardage. They need to, it works both ways. And let's face it, this offensive line has had his continuity problems this year due to all the injuries. I think Kemo's not 100%. They weren't able to really have success running that counter pike play yesterday either. So, I'm with you. I'm not willing. Now Rashard has had his problems earlier in the year as far as hitting the holes fast. If the hole's not there, there's nothing to hit. He's going to have to bounce it outside. He had a nice stiff arm on top of, I think, one of those runs that you're talking about yesterday. They're going to have to get better running the ball consistently, okay, instead of just a few big runs here and there. I think you're going to continue to see a little bit of switch here and there, take a series off and let Redmond and Moore get in there. But, they're running enough to be effective to bring play action into play here. And the Steelers' offense is predicated on the pass with the big play. And people still don't want to acknowledge that, but it is what it is.
Yeah, it is what it is. And that's exactly right. And we're going to see more of that as these young guys continue to develop. And as you said, the middle of the field opens for Heath Miller. He continues to just do the right things. He made a couple tough catches yesterday. Nobody runs harder with the ball straight ahead when they have it in the middle of the field than Heath Miller, willing to put his head down and get every yard he can get. He's just I hate to say a throwback type football player, but really a hard-nosed guy who is a very talented guy. And the combination of those two things don't come along all that often. But, Dave, the Steelers got the safety from Woodley as he came in untouched and did a really good job, as they pointed out in the TV broadcast, to stand on his feet when he got the shoulder fake. And it's unfortunate it doesn't go in the books as a sack safety for him because of the intentional grounding, but certainly that's his play. And then the game played out. The Steelers got a couple field goals late, and then they give up a late touchdown on an 11-play drive. Is there anything to take away from the fact that both Tennessee and Arizona are driving on our kind of late big lead type defense? Is that no big plays have been hit, but I'll tell you some big plays have been missed. And in the Tennessee game in particular, I thought they missed some throws down the middle of the field that could have made a difference in the game. We saw Cobb miss one early down the middle when the two safeties were beat by the tight end going down the middle. But is there a takeaway from the late touchdown, the garbage touchdown that Arizona scored?
I didn't see it as that. I see it as pretty much, just don't give up the quick strike there. Let them have the stuff up underneath there. And that's pretty much what they did. They marched on down. Heck, that was what? 11 plays, 71-yard drive there.
Yep.
They had to pass. They were laying off Fitzgerald too. I think he had two of his receptions on that drive too. So, you know how defenses are when they have the lead there. They just don't want to give up the big play, and that's what happened. And then the touchdown to Doucette. I still was not worried with the overall outcome at the game at that point. They pretty much had controlled them on defense up until that point as well. So, you get the win. They have to burn, a little bit of time, although they only burned about 253. But the best thing is when the Steelers got the ball back there, they didn't give it back to end the game.
Yeah, absolutely. Really nice job there of getting the first downs. One holding penalty they were able to overcome. Mawaldi Moore doing stuff, Manny Sanders. And Ben, Ben is just playing better and better. I think I'm not sure his game this week was better than the five-touchdown game, but certainly a really nice job this week. Again, being careful with the ball, being able to hit the important third down passes, being able to obviously throw the home run ball to Mike Wallace. The Steelers took another shot down the field that he just missed early on, that he actually chopped his stride a little bit because he got engaged a little that he might have taken. If he had caught that, would have been another 65-yard touchdown. Dave, here we sit now. We looked at the schedule. The Steelers got the nice win against the Titans. Going into that game 2-2, I think people were pretty nervous. They get the win at home there. Then they look terrible in the second half against Jacksonville, but they do enough to get that win. And then they took care of business. This game was not as close. I mean, it's not close. It wasn't close. I don't think anybody ever thought this game was in jeopardy, maybe for a half a second, up 17-14 in the third quarter. But now the Steelers are 5-2. We're right where we thought they would be with these two games coming up. And the reality is, look, even if they lose both these games, they're probably still going to make the playoffs. But certainly I feel like if they win both these games, the playoffs is a done deal going into the last seven games of the season. If they split, they're in the driver's seat to get there. They'd really kind of have to fall apart because we've talked about the second half of the schedule. They got four of the division games. They've got Kansas City. The only really game that looks tough is on the way to Kansas City. Look, it could be tough in Kansas City on a nationally televised game at night, but the tough game is going to be the Monday night game really late in the season against San Francisco. What are your thoughts here going into New England and the Ravens?
Well, we're 5-2, and we haven't been pretty getting there, but they only judge you by wins and losses. There's a lot to work on still, I agree. The thing with these next two games, if you had your druthers and could only win one, well, of course, you'd want to beat the Ravens. But, the Patriots are going to be a good measuring stick. And let's face it, they're not a team that's above being knocked off. They've given up.
No. Let's be very clear. They're an offensive juggernaut. They are at best an average defensive team.
Yeah, they've given up tons of big plays this year, and that plays right into the Steelers' hands. They so much so that they're going to have to, as much as we're worried about Wes Welker and what Tom Brady's doing on offense, they're going to have to be as worried about Ben Roethlisberger this time around, along with the young receivers and the tight end as well. So, this might be a game where both both teams, whoever can stop the run and not turn the ball over, might win this game, because I think both these teams can run with each other offensively through the air, and I fully expect that. If you don't allow the big play and are able to strike on them a few times, the key is getting pressure on Tom Brady, and we'll, of course, break this down more in depth going forward here into the week and all, but this is not a game that you have feared as much in the past, in my opinion, with the Patriots. Sure, they have owned us the last several years. Sure, last year was ugly and all like that, but this is a little bit different Patriots team, and they're not the top echelon that they were in years gone past, in my opinion there. So, these two are going to be measuring sticks, because I think neither one of us can say, hey, what type of team do the Steelers have right now due to all the inconsistencies that we've had?
Yeah, I think you hit it all right on, Dave. I mean, I think there's no question the Patriots are one of the three or four best teams in the AFC, but they're not kind of the dominating team they've been because of the defensive side of the ball. And this is a game that it very well could be, 31-28, 31-27 type of game. The Steelers, I think, defensively have gotten better as they've gone on here. I was highly critical of Aaron Smith and them getting run over on the left side of the D-line, and he and Lamar Woodley in the first three or four games, and obviously Smith's not there anymore, and Woodley has really picked up his play. So defensively, I think we've seen some good things. We know the Patriots aren't necessarily going to try to run the ball a ton. They'll try and keep you honest with that. So that means, not having Casey Hampton in there is not maybe as big a deal as it would be against the Ravens the following week. So some of these things actually may play into the Steelers' hands. I think this is a wonderfully great, good opportunity to evaluate the Steelers' defense, to see how Dick LeBeau tries to scheme against this Belichick offense. I am very much looking forward to that. I'm going to be at this game. It's going to be great fun. I don't think I've looked forward to a Steeler regular season game as much as I'm looking forward to this one in a long, long time, both from a fan perspective, but from a tactical perspective, because of what the Patriots have done to us, particularly offensively.
Yeah, and, we've talked about it heading out, earlier in the year and in the offseason about that two tight end attack of theirs, and that's going to be the key there, and I think we've seen some moves. We talked about Cortez Allen earlier in the show and the big die and the big nickel that they like to run. I think all this is kind of schematically kind of working together to build towards this game as well as the next week game against the Ravens. Hey, let's not sugarcoat that. These are the two biggest games of the season right here. If you go 0-2 in these games, you're really going to be scrapping and fighting the rest of the way for a wild card. If you win one, I think you still have good shot at the wild card. If you win both of them, well, as you said, I think you're looking pretty sweet, depending on how the Ravens play out the rest of the year, as to whether or not you can capture the division. But at least it lets you know, if you win both of these games, that you're hitting your stride right at time. You have the bye right around the corner as well. Hopefully start getting some healthy bodies back. Some of these younger kids start contributing more. But, hey, I'm with you. I'm excited for this game. I do not fear this game as much as I have in the past. I think it's a game that's winnable, and we'll break it down more in depth as we go.
Yeah, I think you hit it right on the head. There's no question in my mind the Steelers win both these games. They're the second-best team in the NFL in most people's minds behind the Green Bay Packers, and that's just fine. And if they win one out of two, you're in the conversation. That's the goal is to get into the playoffs. Certainly you'd like to have home field, but we've seen teams much more frequently these days do it all without home field. You don't want to necessarily play that extra game in the wild card, but this is a fun game, and yeah, I'm going to enjoy talking about this the next on Wednesday and Friday, Dave. Great stuff as always. Anything you want to wrap up with?
No, I'd like to thank Nick Ricchetta once again for filling in last week. Amazing job getting the helmet for the week. We had some fun with that. We had some fun at your expense as well, too. I'm glad to have you back, David. I'm glad you had a great time off there. And we have some hard-hitting stuff coming the rest of this week here. Hopefully a beat writer on Wednesday and our normal preview show on Friday. Please subscribe to iTunes, Twitter, all of our, at Steelers Depot, at Hammer Speaks, at Terrible Podcast. Send us any messages or questions you might have. We love getting the feedback. It's been amazing, the following that we have built with this show. I'm thankful to have David with me for 100 episodes on this, and hopefully 100 more in the future.
Yeah, great stuff, Dave. I appreciate the kind words, and thanks to Nick as well. I've enjoyed doing it with you, and we will be back at you on Wednesday with episode 35 and episode 101 of The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.